Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, made in France since 1925. The first and finest enameled cast iron cookware and a favorite for generations. For more information, visit lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum, and I love to talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. Thanks for tuning in today to Feast Your Ears. This is episode number 128. If you're just tuning in for the first time, all of the previous episodes can be found in the archives at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm really thankful for listeners like you, not just in this time of thanks, but always, and I would love it if you'd leave me a review wherever you find this podcast. It's available on Stitcher, on Spotify, on the internet, pretty much everywhere you can find it. Today's theme is the four seasons, winter, spring, summer, fall. There are four seasons in most places that we think about, although it seems like in California right now there's only one season. It's fire season out there. And certainly our hearts and thoughts go out to anybody that has lost family, friends, land, animals, things like that out in California. But, you know, we talk a lot about the four seasons. We talk about eating seasonally. It's something that in the last 10 years has become a big fad. You know, people trying to eat from the green markets and trying to, you know, eat what is being grown in a given time. And that can mean different things depending where you are. I think many of us may not sort of realize that one of the greatest restaurants in the world that sort of was one of at the forefront of the gourmet sort of food and restaurant movement, certainly here in New York, was or is the Four Seasons, which was opened in 1959 in the Seagram's building and was at the time really ahead of its time. I mean, I think it took like 50 years for the rest of the world to kind of catch up to this idea of eating seasonally, but that was the restaurant was named for the Four Seasons and they changed their menu. And my guest today is Diego Garcia, who is now the executive chef of the Four Seasons, which was closed for about 2 years, reopened in August. And we're going to talk today about what that means to take over kind of the helm of a restaurant that has all these classics, but also has an ethos of eating seasonally and cooking seasonally. So thank you so much for joining me today, Chef.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
So, you know, the Four Seasons has a ton of history. It's older than either I am. It's older than you are. You know, how did you come to sort of find yourself at the Four Seasons?
Well, I owned a little restaurant called Gloria in Midtown, 53rd and 9th. There was one of the owners of the Four Seasons, Julian Nicolini, used to be a regular there at the restaurant. Oh. And he'd come in very, very often.
So he was stalking you, essentially.
Essentially. and he loved the food. We got along, developed a friendship. He talked to me about the Four Seasons. Obviously, I've known about the Four Seasons for many years, you know, through culinary school and just working in New York. So it was always interesting for me to talk to him and hear the stories and about the restaurant. And then we came to a place where we started discussing me possibly working there and being the chef for the restaurant. And one thing led to the other, and here we are now.
I mean, I think it is an amazing story in that the restaurant was in the same place for, you know, almost 50 years, well, yeah. No, for more than 50 years. Almost 60 years, and then had to move, and so closed for 2 years, and so you get to step in kind of to this historic restaurant that's brand new, right? I mean, yeah. It's like it's not the same space that it was. It's a brand new kitchen. It's all those things. So, you know, in doing that, you know, obviously there are a lot of dishes on the menu that are classics. I'm sure you have customers who come to the Four Seasons who, you know, still may have even eaten there when it opened in 1959. How do you, as a chef, sort of keep those old classics on the menu, but then have room to kind of play yourself? Do you rotate through those, or are there items that you guys have decided just kind of like stay on the menu?
Well, the classics are, for example, the duck. It's a big time classic. The Dover sole, the lamb, and crab cake.
Yep.
It's very important to maintain some of those classics. It's what the Four Seasons is known for. So I approached it more in a sense of being, you know, proud and happy and thankful to be able to execute those dishes that I've heard about for so many years, and also be able to do my own menu, obviously revolving around seasonality, but love the dishes that we have, the duck and the Dover sole. The new dishes that we have are, you know, very light, fresh, seafood forward, very focused with sustainability and the seasonality. Sorry.
Yeah. Sure. Like I see there's like the snapper with grilled fall vegetables on the menu. I assume that's an addition of yours.
Yes, it is. So the majority of the menu is my own, besides the dishes I just mentioned.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. And those are called out. I mean, there's like the Four Seasons steak tartare. Obviously, that's a dish that may well have been on the menu now for 60
years. For a long
years
time,
almost.
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything big planned for next year, it being the 60th anniversary?
Not yet. I haven't heard anything about a get-together, a little party, but I'm sure we'll do something.
Cool. Yeah.
Definitely a celebration. We have a lot of menus from the past. We have archives of
sure.
You know, menus from the 50s, the 60s, 70s. I would really love to execute some of those old school dishes and bring them back a little bit.
Yeah, that would be really fun to go through the ages and kind of look at dishes that were on the menu and sort of bring them back, like throwback style.
Definitely.
Yeah, that'd be neat. I've never had the pleasure of eating at the Four Seasons, but I was recently paging through a copy of the Four Seasons cookbook or book sort of about the history of it that came out, I think came out in like the 90s, maybe a little bit later. And it was amazing to me to kind of understand its history, not just as a like culinary importance of it being a seasonal restaurant and it being sort of very, you know, at the absolute top in terms of restaurants in a city like New York, but also the number of like intense kind of interesting parties that were held there. I mean, there were lots of like really, you know, it seemed like for quite a long time, and I imagine this still to be true, although I know the space is a little bit smaller, but like it was a big place for celebrities to throw parties or for promotional parties. Is that something you guys have been doing in the new space as well?
Yeah, obviously the space is a little smaller, but we do definitely offer a PDR, a private dining room that seats 100, and we do multiple different parties from birthdays to weddings to just get together for companies.
Now, are you running that space out of the same kitchen as the restaurant?
No, there's two kitchens. There, okay. We have the main kitchen that we do the a la carte menu, and then there's a kitchen upstairs just designated to do the private dining.
Got it.
It'd be very difficult to do
That was why I asked. I mean, obviously, with a brand new space, it's much easier to think about those things, right? I mean, I've seen lots of restaurants, you know, even like Roberta's, where we're sitting today, that's grown organically over the years and didn't necessarily plan to have, you know, this whole seating area that we're looking out on wasn't here when this restaurant opened. So they haven't made their kitchen any bigger, but they've added like 50 seats. So like sort of how do you manage that in a restaurant? Tell me a little bit about growing up. Did you cook seasonally? Did your family eat seasonally when you were a kid?
Yeah, big time. I grew up in I was born in Mexico, the Cio Cortez area, in a little town called Puerto Peñasco, also known in English as Rocky Point. It's a fisherman's town. Some of my earliest memories are waking up. I lived in this little hill, the only hill in the town. And you run down, we'd go down and at 5 a.m. with my mom and take a bunch of vinegar and pour it over the rocks, and this octopus would come out. And so
explain that to me. So are they attracted to vinegar?
No, they just, I think it's a little painful for them. So they try to get out of the little burrows that they have to try to escape. So you just kind of grab them and we take them home and cook them. We did a lot of clamming, a lot of fishing. So we lived off the ocean. You know, during that time, there was hard times for our family financially, but we ate like kings. I mean, I think I had the best.
I mean, that access to the ocean is amazing. And especially as a kid, I mean, when I was a kid, we spent a lot of time on the coast of Maine. And starting from a young age, 7, 8 years old, I would go down to the dock in the morning with a fishing rod at sunrise and catch some fish and then come back to the house and cook them for breakfast.
You definitely develop a sense of appreciation and understanding to, you know, number one, the work that it goes into catching fish or farming or growing a cow, raising a cow. But it was a really, really cool experience. We also owned a little restaurant in that town that was also seafood focused. So I was always in and out of the kitchen trying to help as much as possible.
Ah, so you went into the family business.
Yes, I was in denial for a long time, but I decided to go with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's, you know, so that's, it's amazing to have access to that fresh seafood. And so now, you know, you're in a place where you're having to order that seafood. So what are some of the things that you, I guess, are careful about in your seafood sourcing? Or what are like important questions for you to ask your sources when you're, say, ordering that snapper for that dish or ordering the sole?
Well, first, I'd like to talk about it. We have a gentleman, Patricio is his name, and he's our seafood buyer. He goes out to the market and buys everything himself. So every spec we give him, he'll find it exactly for us. You know, if I need like a 3-pound Dover fluke, he'll find it no problem. So we definitely like to stay within season with seafood and try to buy from small fishermen, small companies and boats. There's also a relationship that the Four Seasons has had for many, many years.
Sure.
So a big part of that too is me, you know, coming into a place like the Four Seasons, I can't just change everything.
Right.
I have to adjust to this history, to this relationships that have been in place for many years. But definitely sustainable. Try to stay local, like I said, and within season. Big thing that we ask is the method of catching, which doesn't happen often with the fishermen we buy from. Patrolling, it's a big thing that I like to stay away from, that only big boats do.
Yeah.
So we don't have much of a problem with that, and we always get the best product. So
cool. Was the menu at the Four Seasons as fish heavy in the past?
It was not.
Okay.
Yeah, it hasn't been very... that's something that I really appreciate Julian and Alex allowing me to do. I love seafood. Gloria was an old seafood restaurant. So, you know, the only thing they did ask for me was to keep some of those dishes that we spoke about earlier,
sure.
The classics.
Yep.
But I could do essentially anything. I had free reign, so I definitely wanted to keep it seafood-focused. And also just to bring awareness, I think I have a little bit of a responsibility at the Four Seasons and to bring some fish that is not as popular or known. And a lot of chefs are not willing to take that gamble.
Right. Especially at the level.
Especially at that level. You know, because not that they can't execute it or that it's just people I don't think are aware or know which types of fish, like a skate, for example. It's becoming a lot more popular, but I remember even 5-7 years ago, nobody had skate on the menu.
Yep.
A lot of people are not aware of the different types of fish that.
Sure. I mean, like, I'm looking at the menu right now and, you know, like, I love squid. But I feel like I would not have expected to find squid on the menu at a place like the Four Seasons.
Exactly.
So I think that's, you know, I think that definitely speaks to your influence on the menu, which I think is really cool. How often do you change the dishes? I mean, is there like a delineated like season? Like, do you guys announce a fall menu and a winter menu, or do you just kind of rotate things in as it happens?
We do. We rotate the menu every season, but obviously it's dictated by Mother Nature.
Right.
You know, just because the calendar says fall starts this day doesn't mean we change everything completely. So,
sure.
You know, we just listen.
Yep.
And we go to the green market and we see what's available. And slowly but surely we'll change dishes as produce becomes available, and same with seafood. And we take it from there. I think it's about around a period of a week to 2 weeks to change the menu completely.
Sure.
But once that happens, it's fairly easy rotation.
Yeah. So I assume you'll have some, like, what's on here now feels very fall to me. So I assume you'll have some changes coming as it gets colder.
Definitely.
Moving into December and January. As far as feedback from longtime customers. Like I assume, you know, through, you know, I assume with the reopening in August, it probably must have been a flood of people coming who had been there before. What kind of things were you hearing from longtime customers?
Big time was, can we get the cream spinach back on the menu? Or like sides. But everybody loves the food. I've heard from multiple customers that it's the best the food's ever been.
Nice.
So it feels good. Yeah. To hear that. Also, I hear a lot about, for example, the squid and the skate, how they've never heard of that type of fish before and how delicious it was. And being able to venture out beyond just what they're used to having at the Four Seasons.
Yeah.
So the whole idea is to create this environment where people feel confident enough that to take a gamble to maybe, you know, because it's, you're spending money to for us to prepare your food, to be able to order a dish and know that it'll be prepared and executed properly and deliciously for you, whether or not you know what it is exactly how it tastes like.
Well, and then on the consumer end, I mean, having the comfort in the space and the, you know, and the confidence in you and the restaurant to say, you know what, it is expensive and I've never heard of this before, but I'm going to try it because this is the right place, right?
Exactly.
To do that. I do find it interesting. I found myself thinking when you were talking about, you know, your fish sourcing and sourcing from the green market and these sort of longstanding relationships that the Four Seasons has, that, you know, looking at this menu, I read it and I think, oh, that's great. Grilled fall of vegetables, like salmon ceviche, the pistachio crusted rack of lamb is one of those things that is obviously a very old, like that's one of the classics, but it's also feels very new to me. And at the same time, I think about what was the sourcing like for this stuff in the 1960s. I mean, talk about like, you know, stuff that we take for granted, right? That you can get like, you know, in the supermarket, you can get a dozen different kinds of extra virgin olive oil in 2018.
Right.
In 1960, there was not any, right? And so that's very interesting to me to understand sort of the, if there are people who've been eating there in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the thousands and now sort of like, you know, how has the food changed but also stayed the same? And it seems to me like your job is probably easier to a certain extent because the quality of food that's available is better.
Yeah. And not only that, the quality of food, but I think everybody is a lot more conscious of sourcing and the demand is higher for it. So, you know, you see it everywhere.
Right.
It's almost a little too much. But yeah, just touching on what you were saying, I remember going through a menu and reading frog legs was a menu item, and I was thinking to myself, where are they getting these frog legs back in the 60s? We also have a farm upstate. It's not a Four Seasons farm, but they grow vegetables for us.
Oh, nice.
So I go through a catalog and I pick seeds. We're starting to do the winter seed catalog, but all through summer, every tomato we had in house, the favas, the peas, they were all coming from a farm upstate called Rochambeau.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I know that farm well.
Yeah, it's beautiful up there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to take a short break and hear from one of our sponsors here at Heritage Radio Network. Le Creuset is our sponsor today for Feast Your Ears. I love my Le Creuset pots and pans, and you know, they've been made in France for generations. And
I do too.
Yeah.
Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, the first to pioneer colorful enameled cookware over 90 years ago. They've been a favorite for generations through the meals and memories the cookware creates and the style it expresses. My name is Kat Johnson. I'm the communications director at Heritage Radio Network. When I'm not making food radio, I'm making food, and my favorite cookware is the 8-quart marine blue Dutch oven that never leaves my stovetop. Before we got our Le Creuset, the cookware we used most often was an antique Griswold cast iron pan. It didn't take long for me to realize how much I'd been missing enamel cast iron in my life. Le Creuset has the superior heat retention of cast iron, but paired with the unparalleled performance and ease of enamel. That means delicious food with easy cleanup. Head to lecreuset.com/HRN, that's L-E-C-R-E-U-S-E-T.com/HRN, to see all the new products and amazing holiday gift deals. HRN listeners will get 20% off the new Le Creuset cookbook with the code HRN.
Welcome back to Feast Your Ears. If you're just tuning in, I'm in the studio today with Chef Diego Garcia, who is the executive chef of the Four Seasons. I would encourage you, as I would like to check out the Four Seasons. I think sometimes in the kind of hipper, younger restaurant world where we have Michelin stars going to restaurants that have opened in what used to be unlikely places like Gowanus or Bushwick, I think people kind of stay away from some of the kind of, the grand old restaurants. But if you tune in or if you've listened to the first half of this show, you can tell that, Diego's really taken the restaurant and while keeping some old classics on the menu that are worth trying, has brought his own great dishes and his own seafood kind of into things. I wanted to ask you, Chef, about staff. So, I mean, the restaurant was closed for 2 years. Do you have any staff who worked in the old space, or is it a complete turnover?
The majority of the staff worked at the old space.
Oh, wow.
a lot of the cooks are from the previous restaurant, which, to me was a blessing, really. There's a lot of regulars, right? They come in and they want very specific items.
Sure.
Or there's a specific salad that they've had for many, many years.
Right.
So for me to try to recreate that would be challenging and probably not consistent enough to what the customer wanted.
Right. It's institutional knowledge, right? They've been in that kitchen for a long time.
They've been so much help.
That's amazing.
And it's made my job a lot easier executing. And, it's important for me to go in there and not have an ego. Yeah. And just because I'm a chef doesn't go like this, right? I was willing to listen from the past and how they executed different items and dishes. And I learned a lot from them. So it was it was very important for the transition to happen. And also we have new cooks that are, they feel the same way. They look at these guys kind of as mentors and leaders in the kitchen who've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah.
Cooking at that level and working under pressure and getting down to those small details, right, that a young cook strives to shoot for. So it's been a great experience, absolutely, with the old look crew.
And you have a lot. You have a lot of sort of different things going on. I mean, you have lunch in the bar, you have bites in the bar, you have a lunch menu, you have a dinner menu, and then you have the private dining, right? So it's a lot. And then you, as you said, you have people coming in and saying, "Well, I want cream spinach again."
Yeah.
Right. And so, of course, I assume you guys try to accommodate that for those older, long-term customers who,
Definitely.
Sort of have kept the Four Seasons kind of as one of their spots to go to.
Very important.
And then you have another, your pastry chef, right? Bill Yosis is the pastry chef.
Mm-hmm.
He worked at the White House.
Yes, he did.
So that's a pretty, you've got a pretty star team over there.
Yeah, he's great. I love listening to his stories. And, Chef Bill is my go-to for advice, not just in life and cooking. He's essentially been a mentor to me.
Did you know him before?
I did not know him before. He's so easygoing and low maintenance and incredibly intelligent. I couldn't ask for a better group of people to surround myself, 12 hours a day.
Yeah. So you guys are open 7 days a week, right?
We close Sunday.
You're close
six
Sunday.
Days a week.
Got mm-hmm. it. Well, that's a little bit easier. So you're only there 6 days a week.
And we only do no lunch on Saturdays.
Okay.
So it's also a little nice. A
little bit. Yeah. So the weekend actually is almost like a weekend.
Almost a weekend.
Yeah.
The fun part of the weekend.
That's interesting. I mean, I guess because it's really I believe that the term power lunch was created at the Four Seasons. The idea that people, in business would go out for a big important meeting. I think that phrase was coined at the Four Seasons.
Yeah. The power lunch was definitely created at the Four Seasons. But, nowadays we like to not just stay within that category,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
And offer a lot more. We have a prefix menu that you can come in and have at the bar for lunch. And it's not just for business executives to do their business meals and spend this large amount of money.
Yeah.
And the doors are open for
right.
everybody and anybody. Yeah.
And now with a slightly smaller dining room, are you finding, I mean, is it packed every night? Are there available reservations? Like how busy is it?
It's fairly busy. You know, since that restaurant is the Four Seasons, it's there's a lot of businessmen that come in for lunch. So lunch is, sometimes we do the same amount of covers for lunch as we do for dinner.
Wow.
And we do it within an hour. Just because it's the hour break, right?
Sure.
Between noon to 1 o'clock, 1:30. So a lot of these offices come in and have lunch with us. Dinner, it's steady. And well spread out, so it doesn't ever feel like super incredibly hard in the kitchen.
Yeah.
It's
that's amazing. I can't think of another like very high end fine dining restaurant where I would imagine that lunch would be as busy or busier than dinner.
Yeah, it depends on the day.
Yeah,
but it's definitely possible.
What kind of new dishes do you have coming up on the menu?
Working on a pasta dish. We want to do a mushroom ravioli.
Oh, yeah.
I like working with pasta, and I haven't had a chance to do it previously in other restaurants, so that's just a little personal thing that I have going on to get better at that skill. There's also, we're going to have a halibut on the menu, which we have halibut now, but it'll be a pot au feu, a little more brothy, truffle juice. It's equal parts veal stock and mushroom stock, finished with a little bit of truffle juice.
With halibut. Oh, wow. That sounds like such a great winter dish.
I just tried it last week. It's going to be amazing.
Oh, wow.
And probably do a lobster. I'm excited for a lobster with a bisque. Classic bisque. Keep it simple, nice and fresh, clean flavors. We do all the sauces tableside. A big part of the Four Seasons is our sauce program. Working at Le Bernardin, number one, understood how to cook fish and how to treat it, obviously, right? But a big part of Le Bernardin also is their sauces. And I developed a passion for sauces. It's a big, big part of the dish. It's kind of the copper to electricity, essentially.
Sure.
So we're huge on sauces. Sometimes the protein might stay the same because, you know, some fish and do stay in season for more than just the season. So the sauce will dictate, you know, in winter we'll make a little more thicker sauce. The summer it'll be more of a broth, a little lighter, maybe lemon butter. So, you know, play around with it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, and then that really, you know, that allows you, I think, actually to even play around more, right? Because you're not having to create an entire new dish. You're just trying to adjust a sauce and make a perfect sauce for that.
Yeah, there's actual times where I think of a sauce and create a sauce, and we'll work the dish around that sauce.
Yeah.
You know, I think other people look at it in the sense of like, oh, you have the protein, let's create a sauce and a starch and a garnish for this protein. Sometimes we approach it via the sauce.
Yeah. So I don't know how much about how your kitchen works and what your actual role in the kitchen is now, but I'm curious to know if there's anything that when you were running Gloria that you used to get to do in the kitchen or when you worked at Le Bernardin that you don't anymore because you're now the head?
Butchering. I love butchering. It's my form of meditation.
Sure.
You know, my girlfriend is a yoga instructor. She meditates all the time. She always tries to get me to meditate, and I just don't have the patience to sit there and meditate. But I explained to her that fishing is my form of meditation. You know, I really enjoyed doing it, and I do miss it. So whenever I have a chance, I try to get in there and butcher some fish.
Right, but having the time, I imagine.
Yeah, having the time is a little more difficult.
Because you're here talking to me instead of...
Right. There's so much going on in the restaurant.
Right. Of course.
It's pretty amazing.
And so you obviously have people, so you guys are bringing in whole fish, and then you've got your team who's taking all that apart.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
We have a butcher, Jaime is his name. He's been butchering for the Four Seasons for 25 years.
Wow.
He is amazing.
Is he the longest standing employee? Or
anybody older? Him and another gentleman who just retired. He was there for 30 years.
Wow.
But yeah, he's... makes me look bad when it comes to butchering.
Well, I mean, it's great kudos that you have him on your team, though.
Yes.
What do you cook at home?
Let's see. What do I cook at home? It depends on my mood. I guess I do like doing pastas. I obviously cook a lot of seafood.
Yeah.
Whenever we do cook, we get a whole fish, and we grip bake it or fry it, but we usually stay within vegetables or seafood.
Got it.
Not a whole lot of meat or chicken, yeah. Even though I do love meat and chicken.
Right. So as far as special events coming up at the restaurant, I noticed that you guys are doing Thanksgiving.
Right.
So tell me and tell the listeners a little bit, like, what is Thanksgiving like at the Four Seasons this year?
Well, this Thanksgiving is obviously my first time around, sure. Right? But definitely want to create that environment of Thanksgiving, obviously, as simple as it sounds. We're going to offer some of our regular menu items and also do the Thanksgiving dinner. So you have a choice to, you know, if you want to have tuna carpaccio, you can have it as your appetizer and then go into turkey and mashed potatoes. So you can create your own little Thanksgiving. I feel like the regulars love going there because they get to see a lot of the people that they've met at the Four Seasons. Friendships have probably developed over the years of just running into each other and dining. So I hear that a lot, that feedback quite a bit. And it sounds like it's a big family feel.
Yeah.
Everybody knows each other.
Sure.
Everybody's happy to be there.
Right. And I guess if that's what your family does, right? I mean, some families go to the mountains, some families go to certain relatives, and there must be people now, almost 60 years, they go to the Four Seasons.
Right. When we were about to open the restaurant, probably a little bit prior to that, maybe March, we were receiving emails about Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Even before we were open.
Just to make sure you were doing it.
Just to make sure we were doing it. So there's people that have been going there for 20 years, 25 years, doing Thanksgiving at the Four Seasons. So it's definitely a thing, you know?
Do you have any sort of fish dishes that you're going to put on the menu for Thanksgiving? I mean, obviously, growing up in Mexico, Thanksgiving wasn't really a thing, right?
Mm-hmm. So, right. We're playing around with the idea. The menu's not completely set yet, but I do like the idea of, you know, since we have a duck and it's shareable, right? It's for two or three. Why not have a fish as well?
Yeah.
Like a whole snapper or sure. A turbo.
Yep.
And although we do want to stay with like a classic American Thanksgiving, but also I think, you know, Thanksgiving is about giving thanks and enjoying and eating and being around your loved ones.
Yep.
And so why not have the option to venture out a little bit from the classic Thanksgiving meal? And so, you know, you have options.
Yeah, oysters were always big
when I
was a kid at Thanksgiving. Not just in stuffing, but like we almost always had oysters on the half shell.
Right now we have these amazing oysters from Huntington Bay and Prince Edward Island. Mm. They're wild oysters.
Wow.
Nobody else has them here in New York City. They're unique, silky, briny, but just the right amount of brininess. If you're a person that doesn't love oysters, right, but can handle it just because your friends are also eating it,
right,
you'll probably like these. There's great.
Cool. Any other, I mean, I assume do you guys do Christmas?
We'll do Christmas dinner.
Got it.
But we're close Christmas Day.
Close Christmas Day. Nice. And then New Year's, I imagine, is a big party.
New Year's will be a pretty big party.
Yeah. Very cool. Anything else coming up? Anything else you want to mention as we close out the show?
No.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for joining me today on Feast Years. It was really fun, and I hope to get in to try some of your menu items and maybe some of the classics.
Please do. Yeah. Hope to see you soon. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Feast Your Ears today. I want to make sure I mention that tickets are now on sale for Winter in the Garden, which is Heritage Radio Network's holiday party. We are supported by listeners like you. And so if you want to come and you want to come and party with me and party with Matt, our engineer, and party with Katie, the executive director, and everybody else here at HRN and all the other hosts, it's going to be awesome. I am doing a ceviche. I just sat here with Chef Diego talking about fish. I'm going to do a ceviche collaborating with Lena Diaz, who is the butcher and fishmonger at Green Grape Provisions. Greenpoint Fish and Lobster is going to supply us with the fish. We don't know what we're using yet because it's coming up in a couple weeks, but please go to heritageradionetwork.org/gala, G-A-L-A, and pick up some tickets and come out. It's going to be awesome. I hear there's going to be an ice luge and some other really fun stuff. If you did, in fact, like this show, please take a moment to rate and review it, and you can reach out to me if you have any questions, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com. You can follow me on Instagram, @thefoodballer. Talk to you next week.
listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.